for the Sunshine State.
Okay. Stay in one spot. Hi. This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who enjoys a good story. We're broadcasting from Clearwater, Florida, where the weather is perfect. Made just for by the mayor. He was telling me last month that when the weather is absolutely perfect, we have to give him the credit. And I am so happy today. I have two wonderful guests in the studio. But before I introduce them, I want to talk about my Sunday. I had a wonderful time visiting a truly unique bookstore in Tampa. It's called Inkwoods. If you haven't been there, you must visit. It's just a charming and delightful place. It's open on Sundays afternoons, and it is so nice. And the selection of books is excellent. And of course, they will order anything that you want. I really enjoyed the bookstore because there's such a wide variety of current novels, bestsellers, history, and of course a wonderful selection of children's books. The ideal gifts for Christmas and Hanukkah coming up. There's nothing really like a book for a gift because it's something that your recipient will save. I know I still have books that were dedicated to me from 20, 30 years ago, and they're precious to me. When I move from place to place, it's probably those books that I would never, I pack up first because I never want to lose them. So think about giving a great book for Christmas, and you will find it there. Now, I'm very happy today that I have in the studio a best-selling, New York Times best-selling, and international best-selling author, Ashley Rhodes Corter. And along with her is Amy Foster. Now, Ashley has written a fantastic book. Two fantastic books. The most recent one came out in June. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, what was the book that came out in June?
In June, my second book, Three More Words, came out, and it was a sequel to my first book, which was a memoir called Three Little Words.
Well, Ashley has written both of these books are about her life in foster care. And it's interesting that one person who was so influenced by her books and became involved in the whole subject of foster care was somebody named Amy Foster, and she's here with us. It's like fate with your name, right?
Absolutely.
Hi, it's so nice to see you, Amy. And so you were actually influenced by hearing Ashley quite a few years ago.
Yes, Ashley came and spoke at a Junior League of Clearwater Dunedin meeting, and she had a great call to action at the end that everybody could do something, and so I got further involved and ended up in the role that I'm in today and even became an adoptive mother as well.
Well, that's fantastic, and your daughter is here in the studio with us today.
Yeah.
Ah, that's great. Now, you're, of course, in the St. Petersburg City Council.
Yes.
And how many years have you been there?
2 years.
Well, that's great. Okay, so we're going to come back to you and talk about the entire process of foster children and, of course, what's been going on, and as Ashley has really brought so many things to life. So let's start back. Now, of course, I mentioned that you are a best-selling author, and you've appeared on Good Morning America.
I have, yeah, that was really exciting.
That is exciting. I know I was on Good Morning America too, and it's a thrilling thing to get on and to be able to talk.
Oh, it's definitely wild. And Diane Sawyer is very intimidating, but so gracious and so lovely. But I've been doing a lot of work with Amy because she's also the executive director of the Guardian Ad Litem Foundation of Tampa Bay. So in my first book, Three Little Words, it chronicles my experiences growing up in the foster care system. So I spent almost 10 years in care. During that time, I had 14 different foster homes. And I later learned that almost 25% of my foster parents were or became convicted felons. So,
oh boy.
So needless to say, you can probably imagine that my experiences weren't completely dynamite, but a really big saving grace in my story was a woman named Mary Miller, who was my guardian ad litem. And nationally, guardians are called CASA volunteers, court-appointed special advocates. And these are men and women who come from a variety of backgrounds, and they just have a little bit of time and really big hearts. starts, and they recognize that there are issues happening and that no one is paying attention to these kids. They essentially become the voice for the child in the dependency system. So Mary was ultimately the only person who believed me when I said I was being abused. She got me out of abusive situations. She made sure I had school supplies, that my teeth were getting clean, that my basic needs were being met, and she really ultimately got me freed for adoption so that I was able to ultimately find an adoptive family when I was 12 and have even a remote chance at a happily ever after.
And I hope she gave you some books along the way.
Well, it's funny you say that. So one of my first big inspirations was in the fourth or fifth grade. I was in an elementary school, and it was my gifted teacher. And she gave me Anne of Green Gables. And I know your listeners can't see me, but I have red hair, and my name is Ashley.
And she's beautiful.
Oh, you're sweet. Now I'm all embarrassed. but it was just... it was remarkable to read that. And of course, I love theater. That was a great escape for me. So to know Little Orphan Annie, and I'm like, all right, I'm seeing a pattern here with these orphans that are, you know, feisty little orphans with red hair and A names. Like, I was like, okay, I'm catching on. So literature and books, and I think writing in general, was an unbelievable outlet for me. And ultimately that translated, I guess, into what I'm doing today, which is trying to use my story to encourage other people to step up for children so that we can see more outcomes like mine.
Well, as a matter of fact, you got a scholarship to Eckerd University. And
I did. So Eckerd College in St. Pete, they were amazing, and I got a scholarship, and then I went on to get my master's degree in social work from the University of Southern California. So now I'm a social worker, and I too became a foster parent, and we have an adopted child as well. So I think it's really important to really practice what you preach, and these issues are very serious, and you can't just go through life complaining about the circumstances that you were dealt. You have to do something about it. So it was really important to me as an adult to become a part of the system that failed me in many ways, but use those experiences to try to make things better for other kids.
And to obviously to inspire many, many people. And so Amy, when you got involved in this entire project, had you ever expected to be involved in foster care?
No, so I have always advocated for the most vulnerable populations in our communities, mostly focused on women and children and families. And I heard Ashley's story and was very touched by it. And then another great advocate in our community named Connie Going also spoke and talked about the need for teens to be adopted and have forever families. So I started volunteering, and that's how it started. And then later I was able to accept a position as the executive director of the Guardian Ad Litem Foundation. And I think the guardian's role, like in Ashley's story, is so significant because it really is the person who's standing in the gap. And they're the only one where the child's best interest is their only interest. So they don't represent the state. They don't represent the biological parents. They don't represent the foster parents. And if you can imagine being 5 years old and being in court, not really understanding what's going on, it's very confusing. That's only one way that Guardian Ad Litem volunteers advocate for their children. They make sure that their medical needs are taken care of and their educational needs. But it's a really rewarding part of the system to be involved with.
So how does it work when somebody volunteers with your organization? They're assigned a child or?
Absolutely. So guardians come in to the picture once a child's been removed from the home. And children are removed for no fault of their own. Their parents usually, there's three key issues that are usually going on, and sometimes all at the same time: substance abuse, mental health issues, or domestic violence. And they have what's called a shelter hearing. So when the child's removed, then the judge decides how bad the case is and will assign a guardian ad litem volunteer to be a part of that particular case. We have guardians from all walks of life. We love to say that they're ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and that's exactly what happens. They go on home visitations. They go to the school and look at the educational records and figure out maybe, you know, if they need some additional supports there. They make sure that the parents are following up on the case plan and that the state is doing their part so that children don't languish while they're in care.
And so like with Amy, they were able to really influence you, give you books, get you the supplies.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Mary Miller, my guardian, she was the only person that walked into a situation and said, this is not acceptable. These living conditions are filthy. She was the one that was making sure that I got my teeth cleaned, I got my hair cut, that I had appropriate clothing for school. And I had other caregivers that were supposed to be taking care of these issues. And I had over 54 caseworkers. And so my foster homes would change, my schools would change. I changed schools twice a year until the seventh grade. But Mary ultimately became that one consistent face. And even though my entire world would be turned upside down, Mary was that constant and really the person that was filling in all those gaps and making sure that I was being cared for properly.
It's amazing. Now, Guardian Ad Litem Foundation, it's GAL, right? GAL, is a nonprofit organization, isn't it?
Right. So the way that the system works, and this happens a lot here in Florida, unfortunately, is that our representatives decide that there should be a state agency that is the Guardian Ad Litem program. And that is a governmental run agency, but they decided that they weren't able to fully fund the system. And so they actually mandated that every judicial circuit, and here our judicial circuit is Pinellas and Pasco County, has a nonprofit that actually funds the needs of the children, volunteers, and staff that work for that particular state agency. And so that's where we come in. Kind of like the Pinellas Education Foundation, your tax dollars pay for school, but it doesn't cover everything. And so we're able to fill in those gaps.
And how do people contact the foundation?
You can go to www.herotoachild.org and find out more information.
Oh, that's a great name.
And what I've really appreciated working with the Guardian program is that they really, because they're focused on the children, they are so collaborative and they're so open to other organizations, other groups that come together. I know sometimes, especially in the nonprofit world, things can kind of ironically get a little weird and territorial, but it's been amazing to work with the Guardian program because they want to reach out. They want to utilize the resources in the community. They want to pick people's brains, bring people together to find solutions for kids. And that's why it was awesome when I was a foster parent. They were a constant go-to, and then we ultimately created an agency and a nonprofit to help fill all these service gaps. And the Guardian program has been a wonderful partner in helping to meet all of these service gaps.
Oh, that's amazing. And when you a volunteer, how many hours a week would you say a volunteer needs to devote to this?
So every case is different, right? And in the beginning of cases, you might spend a little more time. But I like to tell people typically 10 hours a month is what you might expect to spend. One of the things, I'm a volunteer myself, and one of the things that I love about it is that it's completely flexible. So I pick the cases that I'm passionate about and want to work on, and then I'm able to rearrange my schedule for a school visit or a home visit or a court date, and you know court dates well in advance. So it's a really flexible volunteer opportunity. And then there's times where, you know, maybe you're gearing up for a termination of parental rights trial or something like that where you might have some additional hours. It really just depends on the needs of each child.
Really,
but yeah, and what volunteers that are very new to this need to understand is that you have a supervisor, you have an infrastructure of support, and you're matched appropriately with a case. This isn't a close your eyes and randomly pick. You have an assessment of what your skills are, what your strengths are, what population you'd like to work with. And people may not realize that there are children in foster care from zero, abandoned at the hospital, to 18, 19, 20 that need help. And I think that there are a variety of skill sets that would really help meet the needs of these kids. And so I encourage anyone to check it out.
Okay, well, we're going to take a little break. And why don't we come back? I'd like to talk about the beginning of your book, what happened and how the entire situation arose with you. So we'll be right back. Thank you.
Hi, it's Sawyer from the Dolphin Tale movies. Now is the perfect time to visit the world-famous Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Millions have seen us around the world, and now you can experience what we do in person. Come and reconnect with Winter and her fun-loving movie co-stars, Hope, Mavis, and yes, that crazy bird, Rufus. Immerse yourself into the world of marine life rescue with the behind-the-scenes tour. Explore the film sets, and don't miss our free boating adventure. Save time in line when you buy tickets at seawinter.com. Kids only $16.95.
Arg matey. When it's time for lunch, when it's time for dinner, when the show's over, when the day's over, when it's time to chill, where do we go? Over to Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub. It's literally in our backyard, right in back of the WTAN studios at 700 Eldridge Street, just north of downtown Clearwater. Just look for the broadcast tower. Nancy's food and atmosphere get rave reviews. The laid-back patio is a great place to hang out, dine, and listen to live music at night. And Nancy's one of the friendliest proprietors in town. And now, Nancy is serving Sunday Jazz Brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Brunch served with Eggs Benedict, crepes, waffles, lox and bagels, shrimp, oysters, and a build-your-own omelet. That's all at Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub, 700 Eldridge Street in Clearwater. That's right where Eldridge crosses the Pinellas Trail between Myrtle and Fort Harrison. Call 446-3717. 446-3717. You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Paul Molloy, host of Freedom Works, The Paul Molloy Show. Heard every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Please join us and our guests as we focus a libertarian spotlight on what's happening in our politics and culture. If you thought our Constitution and the Declaration of Independence really did stand for individual freedom, then you'll be coming to the right place. Again, that's Freedom Works, The Paul Molloy Show, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tan Talk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all...
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity products you hear about right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network for personal service, you could call Pete Greenway at 501-538-3160. That's Pete Greenway at 501-538-3160. And remember to tell him Lola sent you. Or you can go online at tantalkhealth.com. That's tantalkhealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guests, Ashley Rhodes Courter and Amy Foster. Ashley is an author who has written a memoir. Her first book was a memoir called Three Little Words. Let's talk about how did you... What made you decide to write the memoir, and then what was the process? And tell us some of the background of the story.
Well, that whole opportunity really fell in my lap in the most unusual way. So when I was a teenager, I had been adopted so late. So school was always a sanctuary for me. But because I was adopted so late, my parents didn't have a college fund set aside. So going to college was a huge dream. But I knew that if I wanted to go, I was going to have to figure it out for myself. So I started applying for essay contests and writing contests and scholarships and pretty much anything I could get my hands on. And I did an essay contest for the New York Times Magazine. And they asked you to write about a day that was really life-changing. So I wrote about my adoption day, and I wrote an essay called Three Little Words. But in it, I talked about how it wasn't this rainbows and sunshine kind of occasion. It was terrifying for me because I had had so many disappointments in my life.
You were 14 years old by then.
Well, I was 12.
Oh, 12, yeah. 12 for the...
Yeah, and so for the, and for the essay, I was 16. So as I'm reflecting on this day and what adoption meant and the fact that I had seen so many kids be unadopted, and even at that point, I wasn't entirely sure if my parents were still not going to just give me back because I've seen that happen. So... I just on a whim did this essay contest, but then I happened to win, which was amazing. And from that, publishers contacted me interested in hearing my full story. So here was this incredible opportunity to be a voice for so many other foster and adopted kids who rarely get an opportunity to share their stories. So I said, yes, okay, I'll try to figure this out. And then it really became like writing a giant term paper because at one point in my story, I was involved in several lawsuits because of how grossly mishandled my case was. And so I, very uniquely to most foster kids, had access to my case files, which consisted of over 80,000 legal documents. Wow. These were foster parent licensing files, caseworker notes, psychological evaluation, arrest records, all kinds of things. So I had my memories, of course, and I think it's really human nature for people to remember really the traumatizing stuff, the really bad stuff. So I remember all of those very vividly, but I have a lot of dialogue and early memories that I was able to recreate based on firsthand interviews from my biological parents, foster parents, teachers, caseworkers. So I went back and I interviewed people and I took pictures and I really had to kind of relive a lot of these experiences, which was pretty traumatizing at times, but I knew that I was doing it for a bigger cause and a bigger purpose, and I knew that this was such a special opportunity, and I wanted to try to give other people a better understanding of who foster kids are, what we can achieve, what our lives are like, and hopefully inspire them to either maintain the work that they're doing, which is often very thankless, as teachers and social workers will attest, but also dispel some of the misconceptions about foster care and foster children.
So you were actually taken away from your mother at just before you were 4 years old.
Yeah, Brett, so when I was 3 years old, and my mother had an interesting story because she and all of her siblings also grew up in foster care. So she was a teenager living in foster care when she got pregnant with me in the first place. So it was that cycle of abuse that was really repeating itself, and that's something that we see so often. My husband and I became foster parents, and we've had over 20 foster kids, and so many of them have grandparents in their 30s, and their parents grew up in foster care. Their parents grew up in foster care. I mean, this cycle of abuse is so prevalent in these families, and that was certainly the case in mine.
It really is a vicious circle.
Truly.
That we have to, people sometimes say, well, you shouldn't tell people not to, young people not to have sex at too young age, but if you can't handle it and you land up with this situation, it's very difficult.
Yeah, and so much of it is access to education, access to a support system. My mom didn't have parents. She didn't have an example of what a healthy family structure was like. She didn't have a Mary Miller or a guardian or a CASA or a mentor or someone to kind of help steer her life in a positive way. And so just statistically, that's what happened. My brother and I ended up in foster care. And then she turned to the people who gave her food, shelter, housing. Unfortunately, those were the drug dealers and the pimps and the people who didn't progress her life in a positive way. They were a really bad influence. And so she, not for many, many years, was able to get it together. But now she's embraced her addictions and is a productive adult. And it takes sometimes years for these families to achieve that point. And in the meantime, we need to be finding permanency solutions for children. I think in our case, perhaps my parental rights should have been terminated much sooner so that I would have been eligible for an adoptive placement when I was much younger.
So how long did it take from the time that you were taken by the court before the adopted rights?
My parental rights weren't terminated until I was 9 years old.
Oh, so it took a long time.
Many, many years. And frankly, we only got to that point because of Mary Miller, my guardian ad litem. She stepped in and she was appointed to our case because she fought to be appointed to our case. So I was living in a foster home and she was visiting another child in the home, and she was kind of like, hey, what's happening with these kids? My brother and I had been in foster care for over 5 years. And nothing was being done. So she stepped in and kind of looked over our paperwork and was like, this is crazy. This is nuts. And so she was the one that pushed the courts to change the plan from reunification, which meant that, you know, they were giving my mom time and time and time again, or termination of parental rights, which meant that I would have a chance at an adoptive family. So Mary was the one that really got the courts to take notice that there were these kids just drifting in foster care. And she held my mother accountable. And when it sort of became clear that it definitely was not going to reunification, then Mary was able to convince the courts to formally change the plan so that I would ultimately have a chance at having a family in the end. So it was really imperative that I had that voice and I had that advocate for something so serious as whether or not I would grow up with a family.
Well, some of the stories, of course, of some of the foster families are really quite horrific, where where they have so many foster children in one home.
Right. Even today. And sometimes people will look at my story and say that, oh, this is so old. Oh, there's so many changes that have taken place. Everything's so different. But sadly, our experiences as foster parents showed us that a lot of the same issues are still present. We still do not have nearly enough volunteer guardians. We don't have nearly enough foster parents. And so, especially when I was in care, we had a lot of foster homes that were very overcrowded. I had one foster home that had 16 kids sharing two bedrooms in a trailer. And we were beaten, starved, locked outside. It was pretty awful. But when there's a shortage and there's caseworkers who, in my situation, some of them were arrested for falsifying records, some were arrested on drug charges. So when you have caseworkers that are willing to look the other way and you have a foster home that's willing to take any child or maybe do it for the wrong reasons, then everyone's happy. The file is off your desk and it doesn't really matter. But we really are trying to promote a collaborative effort between community members and schools, recruiting foster parents, recruiting adoptive parents, and making sure that guardians are really front and center in these cases, because they can often very specifically meet the needs of that child and help expedite that permanency solution, which is going to look different for every child. Reunification is not always the best answer. Maybe that is adoption, but maybe it is finding a relative. After I graduated college, I became a guardian ad litem, and that was one thing I prided myself on, is finding those relatives when nobody else would or nobody else could, or helping to rehabilitate that young mother who just needed some life skills, or get families back together when we can. But when that wasn't a possibility, you better believe I was the first person to stand up in that courtroom and say, this child deserves a chance at a family, so how are we going to make that happen? And I may or may not have done some recruiting myself. But, you know, we have to have someone taking action for these kids, and that's what guardians do, and that's why it's such an amazing organization.
Now Amy, on the side of the talking about caseworkers, as somebody in the government, how do you look at caseworkers, and I know that they're overloaded, but there have to be some guidelines here, because recently we had a terrible case here where a young girl was gone for a year and nobody even knew about it.
Yeah, so that's the great part about being a separate 501c3 from the state agency, is our mission is really focused on providing advocacy and support. So where a state agency worker really can't push back against the system that they're working for, we're able to do some of that. Caseworkers are overloaded. There's a lot of turnover. I know in our community, I haven't looked at the numbers in the last couple of months, but just a few months ago, it was about 70%. And research has shown that every time that a case manager changes in a child's case, it could set that case behind for permanency at least 6 months. The difference with guardian ad litem volunteers is that a case manager may have 35 children or more, whereas a guardian ad litem volunteer usually has one family. So we're talking one child, or maybe upwards of four or five children, but it's one family, and they're able to pay attention to that individual child's needs.
And not all caseworkers are made the same. I had some great caseworkers in my situation, and as a foster parent, we worked beautifully with incredibly dedicated workers. And that's not to say that case management, I'm a social worker myself, so I don't dare speak poorly of caseworkers, but not all guardians are the same, not all caseworkers are the same, certainly not all foster parents are the same, but sadly in this system, it takes sort of one bad egg to sometimes result in a fatality, and those are pretty high stakes. So we really have to be making an effort to be recruiting resources for current workers, but also constantly be breathing new life into the system. And so we're bringing fresh faces and fresh attitudes and fresh ideas to find solutions.
Yeah, I think it's easy to blame the worker, and they're really, I mean, this is high stakes, high stress work. I can tell.
How many? In our area alone, how many foster children do we have?
3,000.
Just in the Pinellas?
In Pinellas and Pasco together.
And in the entire state?
I think like 14,000. Oh, wait. What was the state?
It's even higher than that.
Is it?
I want to say it's at 25,000 in the state right now.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's actually the highest it's been.
That's
since
right.
2002. And one of the things, again, it's easy to demonize caseworkers, but one of the things that if you talk to any child protective investigator right now, they'll say to you, you know, this is the worst they've ever seen it. We have a problem with families in our community, and there's not mental health support, so they're not able to refer people to the services that they need. Back in the day, they'd say, you know, we'd get 800 calls a month, and it would be a child who wasn't being supervised or maybe a dirty home. Now it's 1,000 calls, and they're all very serious abuse, and they're overwhelmed. Here in Pinellas County alone, I want to say we have 80 slots for child protective investigators. But again, because this is such high stress work, they're never able to fill more than 60 of those slots. And they're handling, you know, exorbitant caseloads.
Yeah. Well, it would be a very stressful job and would take a big toll emotionally on anybody.
Oh. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, as foster parents, we had children that came to us, little toddlers that were being used as ashtrays, babies that were found eating their own feces. I mean, the stories that you hear, can you imagine what it's like to be that caseworker to come in on that home and be the one to remove that child? It's unbelievable. And what's crazy is people don't realize that this is happening in our backyard. I had some foster kids that just because I got to see their file, like their original families were like 5 minutes from us, you know, or down the street. It's really remarkable what's happening here in our own neighborhood. We saw kids come into care that were found in a shopping cart on US 19. Like, it's really remarkable that there is such a tremendous need in our own community to help these kids. And so if you think about what these caseworkers and these child protective investigators and what the system is really dealing with, it's pretty overwhelming. So that was a big reason that we encourage community members to give back in any way that they can, because this is such a huge issue with a variety of ways to contribute by becoming a guardian ad litem, becoming a foster parent, becoming a caseworker or a supporter, or even just an advocate to make sure that people are aware of what's happening. All of those things make a tremendous difference. And our numbers show us that if we're not dealing with these kids now, we're just going to be dealing with them in the next welfare system. So many kids age out of foster care, which means we have homeless teenagers all over the place. We have homeless teen parents with their homeless children all over the place filling our streets, and people are scratching their heads wondering where all of these systems of care are, you know, why are all these numbers skyrocketing? So many of these people have been victims of child abuse, neglect, or foster care. So we really, really, really have to be investing in them.
And from the point of view of funding here in, let's just talk about Pinellas County, are we always sort of pushing for more funds for care here?
You know, I can't speak to what the system of care here does, since that's a separate agency, but I do know that they advocate for additional funds every year. But we're talking about children coming into care with more needs than the system can possibly provide for. And that's, again, where the Guardian Ad Litem Foundation is able to provide supports.
So one of those gaps.
Yeah, one of the things that Ashley tells from her own story is that her guardian maybe was the only one who thought about celebrating something like Halloween or her birthday. And we say at the foundation that we're not interested in children just surviving. We're interested in seeing them thrive. So we make sure that they have opportunities to do things like dance, football, things that let them be kids while they're in this tumultuous court system.
So back to the adoption day, the day really that changed your life. What were those three little words?
Well, when people ask me what the three little words are, I always joke that they're read the book. Because,
yeah, so, that's no, what I was going to
well,
say.
Well, I did spoil it once on a radio show, and I got just horrible hate mail because we are not a nation of spoilers. People do not like
so
spoilers.
That, we won't
so
ask
you,
we'll say,
I won't spoil it, but I can tell you that they're definitely not the words that you think that they are.
Yes, they surprised me. So I won't ask this question, but it is the first book is fantastic. And when we come back, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about her latest book, which came out in June. And the name of it is?
Three More Words.
Three More Words. Okay, we'll be right back.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Are you tired of slanted mainstream media? Are you sick of hearing the same old stories on every news station? Are you bored out of your mind? Then join me, Lori Zook, on The World of Lori Zook every Thursday night at 11 p.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network. Smart, sexy, and savvy, I discuss real topics you will find interesting, from dating to animal abuse to music, the law, and more. Real topics with real people that will make you think. That's Thursday night at 11 p.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network. You're never alone with me.
Hi, my new show on Tantalk Radio. On Saturdays from 3 to 4 p.m., I am Dawn Reese with Hollywood Connections. My show is exciting. We have major stars, major artists, major movie producers, agents, casting directors. I even help cast for Home Shopping Network. You might be on that show as well. We have new talent segments. Be discovered. Remember, Hollywood Connections on Saturday from 3 to 4 on Tantalk Radio. I'm Dawn Reese, your host. Tune in.
Hi, this is John Austin, host of the book club on the Tantalk Radio Network. I spent 35 years in publishing, and today I want to tell you about a book that can change people's lives. The book is No Cash, No Problem, and the author is Dave Wagenford with Ali Pervez. Dave Wagenford is one of the greatest barter experts in the world, and he's bartered over $500 million worth of goods and services. If you want to remodel your house, but the cost is just too high, or maybe there's an automobile that you've dreamed of owning, but thought you never could afford. This book will tell you how you can do both of those things, plus hundreds more with little or no cash and without going into hock for the rest of your life. Maybe you're a business owner with a cash flow problem that leads to low or non-existent profits. Read this book and see how you can increase your cash flow and your profits by time-proven techniques. The book, again, is No Cash, No Problem, and you can buy it now on Amazon for just $7.98 for the ebook edition. Do yourself a big favor and buy it today.
Grammy Award-winning jazz artist Kenny G is performing at Ruth Eckert Hall on Tuesday, December 1st. Show starts at 7:30 p.m. Come hear the saxophone artist play songs from his latest studio album, Brazilian Nights, including classics from his many other albums. Get your Kenny G tickets for Tuesday night show. Call Ruth Eckert Hall at 727-791-7400 or online at RuthEckertHall.com. Enjoy a night with Kenny G at Ruth Eckert Hall for your holidays.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guests, Ashley Rhodes Corter and Amy Foster. Ashley, let's talk about your, before we talk about your latest book, which was released in June, tell us about a little bit about your adoptive family, because it is amazing. They deserve all the respect. I don't know what percentage of foster children are eventually adopted.
Well, certainly the adoption of older kids and teenagers is very, frankly, very rare, unfortunately. So even at 12, at that point, I figured I was over the hill. In most states, independent living services, which are programs designed to help kids figure out how to live on their own, they start when you're 13. Mm-hmm. So by 12, I figured that was it for me. I really didn't have a hope for a family. So my adoptive parents luckily had a great support system, and there's an entire chapter in the first book entitled Testing, Testing, where I push every button that they have. And it was this constant testing behavior because I didn't believe they were going to keep me. I didn't believe in happily ever after. But they were amazing and really stuck by my side. And now we have an amazing relationship. And so I'm hoping to see more adoptions happen because there's over 120,000 children available for adoption right now, literally just waiting for a family. So there are tons of possibilities for these kids, but someone's got to step up and be a voice for them.
And your adoptive parents were amazing.
They were. And so but my adoptive mother's actually a guardian ad litem. So she was a guardian for over 25 years. So she knew that there were really amazing kids out there. And my dad volunteered on a lot of boards. And he's a documentary filmmaker. So they did a lot of videos on child welfare issues and won a couple of regional Emmys. And they were very involved in these issues. And so it's funny because when they were going through their classes to become adoptive parents, they were actually told that they were poor candidates to be adoptive parents because their house was too nice and they traveled and their eldest son went to an Ivy League college and they were never going to find one of these foster kids that was college bound and they couldn't possibly have a fruit bowl sitting on the dining room table. So they actually failed their first home study because they had a fruit bowl sitting out. They're like, oh, well, you can't give these kids access to food like that. I mean, it was really unbelievable. So luckily my parents, they're like, this is outrageous. Like, I know that there's amazing kids. We work with these amazing kids. You guys are just being silly. So luckily they didn't listen, but it was really amazing that they were discouraged in that way because, again, there are so many misconceptions about how kids enter foster care, what we can achieve, who we can become. So it's funny kind of hearing the story from their side because it's just so surprising. And luckily they knew better and they kind of went with their heart and went with their instincts and surprise, here I am. And so much for an empty nest.
And of course you took their name and
funny. So I was adopted much later. I had spent my entire life as Ashley Rhodes, and that was an identity that I had a really hard time getting rid of. But they were like, okay, Ashley, let's get real here. One day when you run for president, we have to have Corder linked on there. We want a claim, so you have got to at least hyphenate your name. And I was like, okay, whatever. So now if I ever run for president, I'll fulfill my parents' dreams by having Corder in the White House.
it's a great possibility with the.
I just turned 30, so who knows? I've still got a few years to work up to it. So
okay, well you're old enough now to run for Congress. So
maybe.
We certainly need advocates in Congress.
I would absolutely love to see more advocates that are interested in family issues and community issues, because something that people don't realize is all of these systems of care are so intertwined and they're so linked. And the success of a family has a direct correlation to the success of an entire community and an entire society and how we function. So I think if people really get back to some of these social work roots, we would really be finding some creative solutions to a lot of the social problems that we're facing right now.
Because many of the problems, of course, this sort of vicious circle we go through of where so many young people get involved in drugs and get involved in sex at a young age, and then it's sort of a vicious circle.
Yeah, a lot of it is access. Yeah, it's poverty, access to education, access to, you know, and my graduate program, I was really interested in the idea of resiliency, and people always look at me like, well, how did you overcome? How did you get? Well, what's interesting about resiliency is you're not born with a better ability to be more resilient than someone else. The key to resiliency is having that one person intervene. And resiliency can be achieved at any stage in life. It's never too late. You can turn your life around at any age. And so it's really important that we're giving these young people, we're rehabilitating these adults, and we're helping people master their own lives and their own stories and own who they are so that they can be productive members of society. Because if we're not addressing these needs, then that's how our infrastructure completely crumbles. So once we're getting back to that people-to-people relationship and starting to fix the problems that are on the ground level, I think that's when we're going to be seeing a lot of systemic changes in our entire society.
And now when you, of course, you speak at a many events, and is that what brought on the second book? Is that sort of what you had learned from?
Sure.
From
I definitely didn't expect to write a second book, but I still was kind of journaling, and that was my outlet. That was my way of just processing my world. And so I kept getting a lot of the same questions when I was on the speaking circuit. You know, what happened to my mother? What happened to my brother? Are you in jail yet? You know, everyone was kind of shocked. Like, were you ever able to have healthy adult relationships? I mean, people are still kind of surprised that, I guess, they're sort of waiting for the shoe to drop because they just can't possibly believe that a foster kid can do anything productive with their lives. So I was interested in answering some of those questions. But then my husband and I became foster parents, and then with having over 20 kids and living their stories and their experiences and what we were seeing in the system, it just got to a really shocking point where I felt compelled to do this follow-up, you know, answer the questions that I get every single day from readers and fans, but also let people know that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. We need Mary Millers and guardians and advocates and foster parents now, really more than ever. These issues are still... It didn't end with my story. My story is one of thousands. It's not unique. It's not the only one. It's certainly not the worst. And some of the stories of the kids that we had in our home, like, make me look like a total sissy. I mean, it's unbelievable what these kids are going through. And we really are, we're in a place where we have to be helping these children because it's literally life or death. There's been over almost 400 deaths in the state of Florida reported to the Department of Children and Families this year, 400 children, and many of them were under preventable circumstances. And I think it's really important that we are recognizing where the systemic flaws are and we're addressing those issues. But I think one of the biggest aids is those one-on-one relationships, how we're interacting with families, how guardians can touch the life of a child. So no matter how much bureaucracy there is, no matter how many laws are or are not being passed, it's about making those human connections with these young people. That's what's going to be the piece that saves them, and that's what guardians do, which is why this is just an incredible program.
Now, did your brother luck out with a similar guardian?
Well, my brother had a similar guardian, and we had a similar set of circumstances. But, you know, my brother was almost killed in one foster home. So he had a lot of really severe abuse. And ultimately, he became one of the more traditional statistics. And he's currently in jail and really struggling in his life. And so he's a very personal and constant reminder of why these issues are so critical, but also how anyone with any kind of adversity, any kind of negative or seemingly negative experience can really turn that around and turn that pain into power, something really influential for other people, because you have to recognize that you're not the only one experiencing these things. I certainly wasn't the only kid that was abused as a child, and I've met so many adults that are like, well, I was abused as a kid, and I wasn't even in foster care. You know, everybody has their own story, and everyone has their own opportunity to be triumphant, and so I'm hoping that my story will inspire other people to get over, not get over, but really own their experiences, but then also if they can at the same time give back in some way, it's sort of this win-win. So it's like volunteering is pretty much the most selfish thing that you can do because it's so therapeutic for yourself, but it's also really healing someone else and creating this ripple effect that is really powerful for a society.
And you were actually involved in helping to prosecute some of the abusers in your...
Well, when I was a teenager, it was sort of crazy. So I was 16 and I'm sitting in the living room and we're watching the news, and then out of nowhere, up on the screen popped two mugshots. And I was like, oh my gosh! And they were the mugshots of these former foster parents that I had that had the 16 kids in the trailers. And I was completely floored. And they had been arrested on over 42 counts of felony child abuse with torture. So finally, there was evidence that somebody was listening to these kids. And I had been removed from that home because I was causing too much trouble. And I was telling lies about them. So all these years later, finally...
Vindication.
Yes. And it was crazy because the state had allowed them to adopt 8 of the kids that were in that home. So I knew these kids were just trapped in this horrible situation. And so I ran up to my adoptive parents and I really wanted to make a difference. And we ended up getting in touch with a woman named Karen Gevers, who was at the time a top child rights attorney. And we created this whole series of lawsuits. And there was a class action suit. And it was really an opportunity to bring some transparency to the child welfare system and hold people accountable, not just wag a finger, but make real changes that were going to allow families to come together and not just brush all these things under the rug and pretend that child abuse doesn't happen. We need to fix it. We need to embrace these problems and make sure that we're really avoiding it in the future.
It's a fantastic story. Both of your books are really amazing. Tell my listeners, where can they read more about you? You have
sure.
a website, of course.
Yeah, my name is Ashley Rhodes Corter, RHODES-COURTER, rhodes-corter.com. My books are Three Little Words, Three More Words, and I also run the Foundation for Sustainable Families, as well as Sustainable Family Services, which provides a lot of services to children in the community. So I sort of wear a lot of hats, but I'm just, that this is my professional, my personal passion, and Guardian Ad Litem is an amazing partner in what they do, and my guardian certainly saved my life in so many ways, so I'm going to be eternally grateful to her and people like Amy who dedicate themselves to our communities and our kids.
Well, of course, the you had 20 foster children, and so it was amazing for them, I'm sure, to have somebody who was not just a foster.
Well, I don't know. I made them eat broccoli, so I think I was not a fan favorite, and I'm pretty sure some of my caseworkers hated us, but I'm really hoping that in whether the kids were with us over a year or with us just a brief period of time, that I know that we made some kind of impact in their life, and at least for those moments, they had a belly full of nutritious food and a warm bed to sleep in and a story to, you know, lay down with, and this interaction with a family that hopefully will have a lasting influence on them.
And to share the joy that you have now found in life.
That's the hope.
Exactly. Of course, Amy, your daughter, is here in the studio, and she's delightful. I see she's over there in the control room, and she's taking our little...
We're learning about Periscope.
We're learning about Periscope, and she's got us on air somewhere, and it's fantastic, and she's delightful. So it must have been, how long ago did you?
I adopted her this summer, and she aged out of care. She'd been in and out of foster care from the time she was 2, and right after she turned 18, I was able to adopt her as an adult.
Well, she's a very, very lucky girl to have you take her. She's so cute. I love her enthusiasm. She's delightful. So again, give us one more time the contact information for...
Absolutely. It's the Guardian Ad Litem Foundation of Tampa Bay, and you can find more information at herotoachild.org.
Fantastic. And this is something that is so important. So I do hope that everyone listening today will think about becoming a hero, because it's you know, the time that you put into this is well worth it. It turns out that you can see just the joy in their eyes when they talk about the work that, Ashley and Amy are doing. You can see the joy that they get from being involved, from showing children how much love there is in the world. And this is so important. And so I highly recommend that. Contacting the organization, and of course getting Ashley's books. They will inspire you Ashley will inspire you as she inspired Amy. So it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to have you both in the studio today.
Thank you.
And I'm really looking forward to your work and keeping in touch with you and learning more as you progress, because it's really, really wonderful. So I want to thank you both, and I just want to remind everyone again that there's many opportunities for writing, and of course Ashley wrote a memoir. If you have an interesting story, all you have to do is get busy and start writing. I will be in the next few weeks, I will be talking more about the San Francisco Writers Conference and the deadline that is coming up for submitting your story to the San Francisco Writers Conference. Meanwhile, this is Patsy with a Z, and I want to wish everyone a great week, and get a book and have fun. And I want to thank Chris, who was in the control room today. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Thanks. Bye-bye.